This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Borderland. Hello and welcome to Tea Earl Grey Hot, episode 4. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland. And joining me tonight, as always, my friend and co-host Dave. How are you, Dave?
I am very well indeed, thank you, Yannick.
And we also have a special guest tonight. He's one of the co-hosts of Destination Linux. He is the host of the DaskGeek YouTube channel. Please welcome Ryan to the show. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how are you doing? Did it hurt to say special guest?
Yeah, kind of.
Fair enough.
We need a clapping jingle so that when we introduce the guests, we can kind of go...
Yeah, we can add that on post.
Yeah, it'll sound like a huge audience. Everyone freaks out.
Yeah.
So how has everybody been this week? Dave, what have you been doing?
Yeah, so this week I've been doing some research into the Star Trek Enterprise universe and trying to find, basically fill in some of the gaps from the stuff that we've already spoken about in the last few episodes. Learning a bit more about the characters and a bit about I suppose the background of the storyline of where we've been so far. And actually, I won't spoil this, but I did discover something very, very key about this episode that we're about to review this evening and one of the films, which I didn't know. And I know you're going to be looking at me thinking, how can you not know that? But I didn't know, and I now do. So it's been a bit of a school week for me this week.
Ryan, have you been doing something related to Star Trek this week?
Well, I'm going to make it related to Star Trek, but you're going to have to follow along with me here a little bit. So you know how a lot of people have the personal assistants, like Alexa and those type of devices, right? And, you know, in Star Trek, they obviously always talk to the computer. But the difference is we didn't have Google in the Star Trek world. So you didn't have to worry about privacy invasion and all of that type of stuff. So there is a unit called Mycroft, which is an open source version of AI. And I have been working with the Raspberry Pi and setting up Mycroft with the cameras, the speakers, and everything else. And basically doing what Scotty did, you know, where he picks up his mouse and hello, computer. Yeah. At that point in the movie, well, that's kind of what I get to do in my home now because I have a device that's, you know, privacy, security, respecting, open source, and has all of the AI capabilities, much like a Star Trek ship. So that was pretty cool. And that's what I've been working on this week.
I have to ask one question.
Sure.
Are you using Popey's voice?
No, but I heard that's an option, and I cannot wait to load that up there.
Oh, dear. Random fact, I went to school with Popey.
No kidding.
Yeah.
How was that? Was he as charming in school?
No, he was all right, actually. We were kind of sort of friends, buddies at school. I remember, this is kind of a bit of a segue, but we did media studies. In the same year, and I think we were trying to put together an advert for a car that we just made up, and I remember bringing in my old Commodore VIC 20 to generate captions for this advert that we were shooting, and I don't know what happened, but I think somebody had a hissy fit over something, and Alan just leant over and switched the VIC-20 off. We lost all the work that we did, and I have no idea why. I'm sure he'll tell me one day. To be fair, this was 30 odd years ago.
Yeah, we get to have Poppy on this show. I don't know if he's a Star Trek fan or not, but
well, if nothing else, he's got to answer for that.
Yeah,
he will be by the time he listens.
So Poppy, you've been warned.
There you go.
Right, so I guess we're going to review this week's episode. Disclosure for our listeners, we are now using Memory Alpha as the basis of our reviews, as their work is licensed under a Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial license. It is compatible with our own. So we're going to use a bit of their work and put a little bit of our own touch in there.
Absolutely. Hopefully it'll prevent the duplication of work that we've been doing up to now.
And the 2 hours reviews.
Yeah. Actually, a colleague of mine came out to me today and said, that was a 1 hour and 54 minute episode you produced last week. I haven't listened to it yet, he said.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, well, I have, but still, it was a bit of a behemoth.
Right, if you guys are ready, we are going to review Borderland, Season 4, Episode 4 of Star Trek Enterprise. So, in the teaser, we're on a Klingon bird of prey, as the crew discovers a transport shuttle containing two humans' biosigns. They use a tractor beam to get hold of the ship and send the team to get the two humans. While they are being escorted to the brig, the humans attack and murder the entire crew. There's something I want to discuss about this scene, and it's something we discussed with Michael 2 weeks ago. It's about the look of the Klingons. So Enterprise is the first series, and the Klingons look exactly the same as in Next Gen. Then they will look like they look in Discovery. The original series. Then like in Discovery, and then TNG back. Like that, it's really a mess. This appearance of the Klingons on Star Trek.
I mean, to me, it's one of those things. As the special effects, the art and makeup really became bigger budget item for TV shows. You could see it kind of adapt throughout the different series. Now they did keep it. Discovery definitely goes a completely different direction, I think, with the Klingons, and I like that direction. I think they look mean. I think they look fierce. And they've updated them because, you know, while I loved Next Generation, one of my favorites, and the Klingons in there, you know, Worf doesn't really hold true to being scary anymore in today's. If I showed my kids and like, oh, that's a Klingon, and it was Worf, they'd be like, eh. You know, it just doesn't hold up. Whereas Discovery's Klingons hold up. Now they look, you know, they look fierce warriors like they did in the past.
They look like their own race rather than just prosthetized humans.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that we have to look at that as a way to show us some aliens and not the how would you say that a literal representation of what they were at the time, but more what the special effects could do at the time of the making of the series. So yeah, it doesn't really bother me as long as, you know, if you can accept that there's, you know, spaceships and humans in space and everybody speaks English, then you can accept that. From the old series, they didn't have the same visual effects capabilities. So it doesn't really bother me. I just wanted to notice that so that Michael can now, you know, scream at his podcatcher.
Yeah, I know that bugs him. He wants everything to stay consistent. But I just think that, you know, the art and makeup and obviously the budgets have increased considerably between these as well. So I welcome the change. I can suspend reality enough to allow that change to happen, that they're going to look more and more alien as the series progress.
And I also think that for the number of people that have commented, I'm sure there are many people that share the same opinion, that the Klingons in Discovery were just too overstated. But if you presented the Klingons as they appeared in Enterprise Next Generation in Discovery, then the other side of it would be people saying, well, they didn't make much effort. They could have done much better than that. They could have given them much more of a character than, you know, the made up human race that they had in the earlier series. So actually, in that respect, there's no way that the producers could have won this.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, I agree. Either way, people were going to be upset. But in this episode that we're talking about, they bring back the Green Girl in a way. And I know we'll get into that later, but if you think about the first series, that was an alien, right? They just paint somebody green, they're an alien.
Yeah, they didn't do a very good job of it either.
No, and so things have just progressed a lot from that point. Obviously, if they were going to bring back a series today and they wanted an alien race that was green, they would probably add prosthetics. They would probably, you know, change the way the face looks or the eyes or add some unique features. But back then, it was enough of an imagination just to paint a regular human green and say, there you go, that's an alien.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moving on. Back on Earth, Dr. Sung sits in his prison cell. Jonathan Archer comes to visit him. He has some question. After Sung reveals that he's working on plans for improvements of the human genome, Archer tells Sung about the Bird of Prey. According to Archer, it was attacked by augments whose DNA matched ones that Sung stole from a medical facility when they were embryos 20 years before. Now, there's something that bother me in this scene. He's in prison. He's not allowed any computer. Obviously, he's only using pen and paper. And yet, he had the report about the attack. How is that possible? He doesn't seem to be, you know, to have news and things like that. So, did you pick that up, or am I just paranoid?
No, I didn't pick that up specifically, but thinking about it, it could have been presented to him as a paper printout. I don't know how this would have happened.
Perhaps the guards gave him an update, you know, before.
He said he read the
Archer
reports.
Showed up. Yeah,
there's a lot of little things like that I picked up in this episode that bother me. So, on the Enterprise, Captain Archer and his senior staff have a meeting. It is revealed that Dr. Sung took the embryos on a distant planet and raised the children as his own. They have been left alone since they were 10 years old when Sung was captured. I guess 10 years ago, I think, I remember.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody knows why the augments attacked the Bird of Prey, but Sung has offered to negotiate with the augments so that they would surrender without a fight. Finding the augments is the only way for Archer to avert a war with the Klingons, because they are pretty pissed off about the attack.
Yeah, so I certainly picked up that the attack on the Klingon Bird of Prey was just completely and totally unprovoked. And almost to the point of noticing that the augments, as they were carrying out this attack, they just seemed completely unemotional. They're just completely emotionally detached from what they were doing. I don't know whether as part of their augmentation, they've effectively lost they have the ability to not feel when they're doing things that otherwise any normal human would have, you know, been repulsed by.
Did anybody draw parallels between this and Khan?
Well, this was my discovery. I don't mind doing this now. Was actually Khan was an augment. They're from the same race. So I did some digging into this because I know I'd heard them before. And one of the good things about Memory Alpha is that they linkify pretty much every single word in their documents. So you see a mention of augment, you click on it, it'll take you to a page about the augment. But yeah, Khan was an augment.
Interesting.
Presumably, was it 60? I can't remember how many years down the line it was now. But, I mean, we are 110 years behind the original series. And was the motion picture set before the original series in the timeline or after? I can't remember.
After.
So we're looking at least 120 years between the events that we're looking at the moment and Khan.
So I'm probably going to butcher this, but, you know, it's Khan Noonien Singh.
Correct.
Right, was his full name. And if you look at the characters here, well, at least what Brent Spinner was playing, his last name was Song. Singh Song. It's kind of an interesting parallel there. You know, I didn't tie it back. I didn't do that history like you did, but clearly that's what kept coming into my mind, seeing the augments was the whole Khan super strong
human element there. And even kind of their, like you guys were talking about, the lack of emotion and just preemptive attacking kind of made me think of that. And of course, the fact that Dr. Eric Song was in a prison cell.
Right. I've just had a look at some of the characters that we meet later on in the episode. And it doesn't look as though any of them have anything other than a single name. They don't seem to have surnames or middle names.
But then between, you know, this episode and the first movie, you said there's the 100 and some years, so they had time to change that.
I suppose, yeah.
So, well, maybe we'll have, you know, some more links in the next episode, because, it's not a spoiler. At the end of this episode, it says to be continued.
So. Yeah, I think there's a cluster of episodes in this particular storyline.
Mm-hmm. Even though I had watched this before, it had been a while. And just since we haven't really, you know, mentioned it, seeing Brent Spinner in this just made me so happy. The second he was on there, seeing Data back, but not as Data, just seeing that him, I was just, as soon as I turned it on, I was like, and he came on, I was like, yes, this is going to be a great episode to be on your podcast with.
While we're on the subject of Brent Spinner then, because this, I did put this down as an observation point, is that his character, his character Sung in this episode has a very similar, almost manic enthusiasm as his character did in Independence Day. Now, I can't remember his character in Independence Day, but although in that character, he wasn't a villain, he was supposed to be on the good side. But from my perspective, I think he does make an incredibly convincing villain.
He does. I'm even looking at still pictures of his face right now, and he just, you know, he's in this deep thought in this picture, and he just does have that villain presence to him, which is interesting when you think about his portrayal of Data, because Precisely. That was the last thing
Absolutely.
You thought of.
Okay, so on the Bird of Prey, a power struggle ensues when the Augment leader Rakin scolds Malik for stealing the vessel. Malik takes great offense of this action, but he admits that Rakin is their leader, although reluctantly.
So what is Malik's issue?
Well, I guess, you know, it's I'm
sorry. The sorry, it's Rakin's. It's Rakin's issue. What was his issue with Malik stealing this vessel?
I think he wants to be the leader, and he didn't. You know, he said that in the scene. He didn't authorize this action.
But at that point, he hang on. Oh right, okay, yeah, no, of course, because Rakin was the apparently their leader at the time. Yes, but he was a bully. That's what he was. He was no leader. He was an absolute out and out bully. There's no other word for it.
I agree.
Yeah. Next scene: Sung is removed from prison and gets on board the Enterprise. He is introduced to Tipple and Malcolm Reed, and obviously he knows them. So once again, I wonder how he can know them, but that's same point as earlier. And then he asks to meet Phlox in Sigbay so he could analyze the DNA that the Klingon recovered.
Yeah, taking a little bit too much of an interest there.
Yeah.
I mean, knowing what we know from having seen the whole episode, at this point, I'm now thinking to myself, well, he's digging for something. He knows something. There's a certain forced, casual interest that isn't just casual. There's a definite motive behind this.
Right. The next scene, I thought we were going to have some link with the previous episode, as Trip and Tipple briefly talk about the wedding.
Yeah.
But then Captain Archer enters the bridge and, you know, the spell is broken. as the Enterprise prepares to launch, Archer takes a moment to regard his reassembled crew and tells them that he wouldn't have it any other way, as the ship leaves Space Dock and warps toward the Borderland.
Now, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that scene, Archer says, Travis, in order that Travis should set the Enterprise underway. Was I the only one who expected him to say, take us out?
No.
Because no, I was really disappointed that he didn't. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for him to say, take us out, and he didn't.
And I believe the scene right after he gave the order, you know, you see the Enterprise leaving Space Dock.
Yep.
And I believe this is the exact same scene we saw on the first episode.
Yeah, Star Trek are terrible at reusing scenes.
Yeah.
I can't remember which films they were, but there are two different films, original series-based films, where the destruction of a bird of prey is absolutely identical between the two films. I can't remember which ones they are, but...
Cheap FX.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, to be fair, it was in a film. So the films are going to be a good number of years apart. How many people are actually likely to remember that exact destruction of a bird of prey?
At the time, maybe, but now you can watch them on... Well, you can't watch them on Netflix right now, but, you know, you can have them on DVD and binge watch them.
Yes, exactly.
And that's when you do that you notice those things. Mm. Of course, if you go to the movies, 2 years after, or if it's like two or three movies apart, then six years after, then you don't necessarily remember, but...
They're not worried about our level of geekdom, right? They're just like, we'll throw this in there. 90% of the people won't even notice, except those geeks. And we're in that category, you know?
Oh, guilty as charged. Another part of that scene, I actually have another question. Another part of that scene was the new chair.
Yes.
So Trip was effectively presented the new captain's chair to Archer. And Archer sat down in it and, you know, he likes the chair, nice and comfortable. Am I, again, the only person who now wants to know what that button does?
Yes, of course.
Don't press that button over there, he said. What button? What does it do?
I mean, that's the perfect example of geekdom right there, because you can't tell a geek not to push a button. We have to know how it works. That's like the ultimate for us.
Why? Why can't I push the button? What's going to happen if I push the button? Should I push the button? I don't push the button. Yes, don't push the button.
But do you push the button, or do you spend years scanning the ship schematics to try and work out exactly what that button is connected to before you press it?
Or you ask... Trip, as you know, you bug him. What does the button do?
He won't tell you that.
Yeah, I need to know what the button does so I can push it at the first opportunity that presents itself, right? So even if he's like, hey, this is going to shoot all the photon torpedoes out at once, I'd be like, all right, great. Now let's go find somebody that we need to blow up because I need to push the button.
I thought I saw a squadron of Klingon birds of prey over in the corner there. Obviously, I was wrong, but, you know, at least we know it works.
Oops, my bad. Okay, so while the Enterprise travels at warp speed, Archer informs Tipple that a Klingon ship was spotted, probably doing reconnaissance in preparation for an attack on Earth. Tipple says that her government is trying to work out a diplomatic solution. Then Captain Archer offers Tipple a compass as a present for her first day of duty. Now, how does a compass work in space? Somebody tell me.
Don't forget that the whole setup of space travel is aligned to the seafaring military. So it's based on the Navy.
Yes, but on this scene, if you look at the compass, you know, It's not going in every direction. It's pointing at some direction.
But see, I think this is more like the when Bones gave Kirk the glasses.
Yes,
right. It was a gift.
It's kind symbolic.
Of, yeah, it's symbolic gift of yeah,
which he then sold. But let's not go into that.
So the Enterprise crossed into the borderland. In Sigbay, Phlox and Soong have a discussion about genetic engineering and the augments, as well as the disastrous eugenic wars of the 20th century. Phlox says his people have used genetic engineering to help cure disease for over two centuries, but that is very different from what Soong does. He is not pleased about Soong's work and behavior, and I was not expecting Phlox to be... To be like that. I mean, as we said, it was last week, I guess, that he's always smiling, he's always happy, he's always taking the life on the bright side. But here, he was really annoyed by what Soong did.
So this was one of the interesting scenes for me because I don't feel like I got closure on this. And one of the things I love about Star Trek is that they put you in these moral dilemmas that sometimes there's not always a good answer for it. Sometimes there is no perfect solution. When they're talking about this genetic engineering, eugenic wars and things, and Phlox says his people have used it for years. And then Song's basically saying, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm trying to do here. They didn't really answer what the difference was, at least I didn't capture, from how Phlox's race has used it versus the eugenic wars of the 20th century was used. So I see that it upset Phlox, but I didn't quite understand what the difference was.
That is a very fair observation. The only thing I can glean from that is that Phlox's sensibilities, in that on Denobula, I'm presuming that the improvements they've made to their genetic code has been for the benefit of the entirety, rather than trying to effectively breed a race of in this case superhumans.
Interesting.
Which is not for the benefit of all. That's the only thing I can think of.
No, that's actually a really good. That's a really good thought if that's what they were going for, because that completely makes sense, right? One is just helping this one group of people who are now going to be the superhumans versus the entire race being benefit from genetic engineering. So at the end, then, the moral lesson here is not necessarily genetic engineering would be a bad thing, but that it has to benefit everybody.
Well, don't forget, of course, Phlox is a medical professional, so his... I don't know what the equivalent of the Hippocratic Oath would have been in that particular time, but I'm sure that he would have signed up to some kind of oath that said that he was going to preserve and heal people, or creatures, whatever you want to call it, life forms. Thank you. And of course, if he's committed to that ethos, which I have absolutely no doubt that he is, then anything that I suppose tramples over that, like breeding a race of superhumans effectively to use as weapons against other people, then yeah, I can certainly see how he would take exception to that.
Okay, so let's move on. As soon as the Enterprise enters the borderland, it is attacked by two Orion interceptors. They transport 9 people, including Teeple. Archer asks Soong how he can get them back. Soong replies that they are probably on Varex 3, being processed to be sold as slaves. Soong offers to guide Archer to this planet, as he is used to acquire supplies from the Orions while he was on the run.
Do you remember a couple of weeks ago we were talking about the physics side of the Enterprise? We were talking about how the Enterprise would have been able to travel at 200 kilometers an hour.
Yes.
And, you know, if they're only a minute away, then they must have been, you know, a long way away. Just considering warp speed. So when the Enterprise was being attacked by the interceptors, they were in warp. Now, Enterprise dropped out of warp and then slowed down. And then a few seconds later, the two interceptors do exactly the same. Now, on the basis that the interceptors are as close to the Enterprise out of warp as they were in warp, then at the point that the Enterprise dropped out of warp, those few seconds would have put the interceptors thousands and thousands of miles in front of it.
That's such a brilliant observation, and that would probably be a military tactic you would use if you were being chased, right? Assuming all this was happening, is you could drop out of warp when they got close to you and they would fly right by it.
Exactly. And this might just be the geek, the 90% of people won't notice that kind of thing. But it's just one of those little tiny details that I just can't let go.
You know what? I was watching Top Gun for the 166th time last night, and you know, Maverick does just that. It
puts right.
The, yeah, the hair breaks and the enemy plane, not ship, the enemy plane goes in front of him and then he shoots them. So yeah, that could be a tactic. Yeah, drop out of warp and let the enemy go in front of you.
Yeah, because I mean, the reaction time for the Orions to to drop themselves out of warp. You know, it's more than a few seconds, surely.
But this type of battle happens quite a bit in Star Trek.
I have noticed
because I'm thinking about Borg, right? The Borg definitely love to give chase while in warp. And generally, they'll shoot, you know, while the Enterprise or whatever they're attacking is in warp, and then the Enterprise will fall out of warp, and the Borg will be right there.
The Borg can get away with that because they don't have the, I was about to say the human aspect, but they don't have the life form reaction times.
Mm, that's interesting, yeah.
Potentially.
Okay, I give you that.
It's all hypothetical anyway.
Yeah. Right.
So, on the board of prey, Malik and Persis, a female augment, discuss the fact that Rakim is taking them somewhere far away to live their peaceful lives. He says that it isn't what their father would have wanted, to run away and hide. Malik suggests that Persis could try to convince Rakim to reconsider his decision. Meanwhile, on Varex 3, Tipol is fitted with some kind of device on her neck. She's then thrown in a cage where she finds unseen Geoffrey Pierce. He is obviously scared, and Tipol tries to make him calm down, which is not an easy task.
No.
In this crowd. Arriving at Varex 3, the Enterprise is able to enter the auction due to an old identification code used by Sung. He is fitted with a transponder, so he won't be able to escape without being tracked. Then Archer and Sung beam down. At this moment, there's some kind of hostility between Trip and Sung. But if I'm right, it's almost the first time they meet on this episode. I didn't really get why Trip was so hungry after Sung.
I thought there was some prior interaction with them at some point. Was there not?
I'm pretty sure they met when Sung first was brought up, when Archer brought Trip onto the Enterprise.
Right.
At the same time he met T'Pol. Because I remember posting a note on there saying that Sung's admiration of T'Pol was greasy. I'm sure that Trip was there at the same... No, it wasn't. It was Malcolm. Sorry. No. No, so yeah, that would have been the first time that Sung had met Trip.
Yeah, and then Sung made a reference to his Vulcan friend, but I didn't get that in either.
Yeah, well, I presume he was talking about T'Pol.
Yeah,
and
me too.
But if he was talking about T'Pol, I found it very interesting that he was able to pick up that there was clearly a thing between them. Maybe that's Sung's superpower.
Talking about T'Pol, she is taken to the auction stand and she is found to be a high-demand individual and she is sold for a very high price to a Tellarite.
The only thing I picked up from that scene was the auction process. I found the cluster of 30 or 40 people randomly tapping at screens. I found that incredibly cheesy. It removed a lot of the believability and a lot of the realism from the episode for me because it just seemed utterly, utterly pointless.
Of course, you know, in a world in which you go to a concert today to experience music, and instead of experiencing that band that you paid $150 a ticket for, everybody holds up their phones in the air and records the whole time, records them being there. Is it that ridiculous when we take it into the future and think people will just be staring at their screen to do all the stuff instead of staring up? I don't know. That didn't bother me. But did anybody pick up that the Big Show was there at that moment? I mean, this was another special guest star, but the big giant green guy is the Big Show from wrestling. Yeah.
Okay. I saw the name Big Show come up in the credits at the beginning of the episode and I didn't have a clue who it was. But now that you've said it's the big dude, the auctioneer chap, then that actually makes sense. And I did pick up on the fact that he picked up T'Pol like she was a rag doll.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that too.
Now, the Big Show in wrestling is a massive human being, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And in this case, which was really cool, they really didn't have to do anything but paint him green.
He looked
like an alien there. The guy, according to Wikipedia, in real life is 7 foot tall, 2 inches.
Wow.
And weighs between 383 and 425 pounds. I guess he goes between there. So when you see him pick up T'Pol, his hand, one hand almost wraps around her entire waist. And, you know, this is just a giant dude. So that to me was like, it was a cool use of a wrestler, a superhuman person.
Oh, definitely. The casting was spot on for that then.
Yeah, and it was kind of funny, this character. Not when he abducted people for the first time, but after that, it was kind of a bit of humor.
Yes,
right.
And do you guys think they were actually painted green, or did they use some kind of CG tricks? Because I believe in the original series, they were painted. They were really painted green.
But, I think they were painted because if you looked at the bits they wouldn't have painted, like around the eyes and inside the mouths, you could tell immediately that underneath that green paint was a pink-skinned human.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. Right, next, Archer is able to locate most of his crew in the cells. Soong explains that the devices on their neck are neurolytic restraints, so that the Enterprise is not able to beam them out. After Soong and Archer view an Orion slave girl up for auction, they find T'Pol, but are interrupted by a guard, so they can't really talk to her. On the Klingon Bird of Prey, in the captain's quarter, Persis tells Rakin of Malik's upcoming plan to overthrow him and take his place as a leader. She tells Rakin that Malik believes he is weak and is making all the augments weak. Persis further tells Rakin that Malik believes that their father if their father were with them, he would choose Malik as their leader. Rakin announces that he will betray their father's principle by killing Malik. Am I the only one to think that the augments were really bad actors?
No. Okay. Yeah, they weren't fantastic.
Okay. No, I thought I'm going to mention that, but I was not sure. Maybe it was just me, but no. Okay.
I did pick up that Persis seemed very, very keen to push Rakin under the bus. But I kind of put that down to her being at a kind of same fanatic level as Malik.
At this point, I didn't really know if she was on Malik's side or on Rakin's side, or maybe she was on neither. Maybe she had her own agenda. But then we know after.
Yeah, I agree. That's what was, I think, kind of done well in this, is you really didn't know who she was kind of playing, and maybe she didn't know. She seemed like an opportunist that wanted to see which one's actually going to take the most initiative to own the leadership position there, and that's where she was going to fall.
Yeah, I've got a comment about that later on.
Okay. So in a corridor in the Bird of Prey, Rakin attempts to kill Malik, but unfortunately for him, all the augments on the Klingon vessel have turned on him, choosing Malik as their new leader. This eventually leads to Rakin's death at Malik's hands, and command of the ship is officially handed to Malik. So I thought it was a bit hasty, this scene, you know. Rakin arrives and then everybody turns on him and he's dead and that's all.
Yeah, the whole gun thing as well. You know, if you're gonna turn up and shoot somebody, make sure your flipping gun works.
Yeah,
but I did find the whole scene. Yeah, I think rushed is a really good word for it. I find it quite cold blooded. It seemed. It seemed unrealistic. If they were brothers, as they were supposed, well, I don't know if they were genetic brothers, but certainly fraternity-wise, they were brothers. But there didn't seem to be any thought. You know, Malik had made his decision to kill Rakin and just went ahead and did it. There was no emotion or anything behind it. Although I did notice. Well, firstly, there were no blood stains, which, again, you know, come on. But right at the end of that particular scene, it looks as though Persis is about to start crying. But Malik is really cold towards her and says, look, don't, not for him. But that I'm now questioning where her allegiance lay.
Yeah, because it's the same as I said earlier. It we don't know where she was, which side she was on.
Not at all. I mean, when she was fraternizing with Rakeen, I was thinking, okay, well, you're playing him at the moment. You're Malik's girl. But actually, maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe, I don't know.
Or it's some regret in there. I actually like that scene because, like everybody was saying, that there really wasn't a lot of emotion in the death of the brothers fighting. And that, to me, was rushed, right? And they could have probably extended this. They had a lot going on in this episode that they could have probably extended out into other episodes. But in this case, they rushed that through. But that was an interesting emotional moment, in my opinion, where you have somebody who wants this plan, but the plan is evil, right? One of them's going to die. And then when it happens, suddenly you realize the weight of that plan of, hey, this person's now dead. This person that you at least pretended to love or had some affection for is now dead. So there was some regret there, it seemed.
So I'm not even sure what purpose this particular scene gave to the episode as a whole. The whole brotherly feud, it doesn't seem to have any end goal. I mean, it may well be that in episode 5 or even episode 6, this will become a bit more apparent. But for me, I would have been quite happy if the whole fighting between Malik and Rakeen didn't even happen.
Right. After Tipol, Anson Pierce was up to for option. Archer bought his crewmen. And he bribed an Orion guard to deactivate the restraint but leave it on his neck. So when he's back on the Enterprise, Phlox removes the implant and gives it to Trip so he can analyze it. Trip finds a code to deactivate all the restraints and Archer returns to the auction along with Sung. Archer is able to deactivate the restraints for all the slaves and the riot ensues. The Enterprise crew is beamed back to the ship but Sung stuns the captain and escapes. He deactivates his transponder so he can't be tracked. Archer climbs on, I guess, on top of a slave's cage, I believe, and spots Sung. Then he activates his arm restraints. Sung uses this to climb a wall, but then Archer catches up with him and deactivates the restraints, causing Sung to fall on the ground. And then they return to the Enterprise. That was this last part when he activates the restraint and then let Sung fall. I found that was a funny touch in this scene.
Definitely
well played. Yeah,
I think it was very well done.
Along with Tipol, you know, hurting her huge guard.
Right,
was fun.
Yeah. Well, the rocking scene.
Yeah. This one too
was absolutely brilliant. Because, you know, you're counting the number of times he rocks back and forwards on his feet, and you think he's going to go this time. I thought the use of the cattle prod to, well, it's not a cattle prod, the stun gun thing, to disable the transponder in Sung's neck was really quite inventive, because he must have known that was going to take him out for a few seconds, and yet he was that determined to do it that he was willing to take that risk, that sacrifice.
Yeah, that's going to hurt.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so on the last part of this episode, Archer accuses Sung, now locked in the Enterprise's brig, of having planned the whole thing, knowing the Orion would attack the ship. He says two of the captured crew may suffer permanent injuries. Sung pleads with Archer to just leave the Augment alone. They are the future of mankind, he said. They're stronger, faster, and live longer than the average human. Archer tells him that they are dangerous and have to be stopped and proceeds to leave. Then Sung tries to insist that genetic engineering could have saved Archer's father, who was suffering from Clark's disease. Those who had banned genetic engineering had condemned him to death, yet the captain refuses to listen.
That was a low blow.
Yeah, but the reaction of Archer was what I expected from him.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you're not going to have me with blackmail or regrets or something like that. I'm set to go and get them, and I'm going to get them with or without your help.
Nothing seems to faze him, though. I mean, apart from the scene last week when we saw a really dark side of Archer, there's nothing else I've seen that's actually where someone's thrown some kind of psychological weapon at him, like his father's disease. And it didn't bother him at all. He's really good at bottling that kind of stuff up and not showing that he may or may not have been affected by it.
I wouldn't say that he's not affected by it. He's just really, really good at, you know,
at compartmenting.
Hiding it. Say, okay, you're not going to get me with that.
And of course, Clark's disease was a progressive degenerative disorder of the brain, hallucinations, ultimately fatal. And so, you know, this would be something, of course, that would speak to anybody who's lost somebody through, you know, terrible disease like that, of why wouldn't you want to fix that? And I kind of seen this as, even though Archer didn't react, this was a way of planting Song to plant a seed in him. So, you know, later on, you would think this would come back. What if, in, you know, way later in Archer's life, he comes across a situation where they're trying to do genetic engineering, and he thinks back on this moment that, hey, this could save a lot of people who are suffering.
Bit of a geek alert moment here, I'm afraid. In the scene when Sung and Archer were talking, Sung was in the brig and Archer was outside of it. During that conversation, our viewpoint was bouncing between inside the brig and outside of it. But for the most part, we were listening to the person who wasn't where we were. So we were in the brig with Sung, and we were listening to Archer over the intercom. Then we'd be outside the brig with Archer, and we'd be hearing Sung over the intercom. And there were some other instances where we got the opposite. So we'd be outside with Archer and we'd be listening to Archer, but not through the intercom. And I watched that scene two or three times just to make sure they actually got the source of the audio correct, that we were hearing through the intercom, or actually not through the intercom, at the right stage.
Did they get it right?
They did.
Your level of geekdom is admirable, sir.
Admirable is not the word I would use, but I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so Tucker and Tipple speak briefly in sickbay. He asks how the honeymoon was, and she says that although she was on Vulcan for 2 weeks after Tucker left, she spent the time in meditation, and she specifies alone. Tucker says that it isn't really his business anyway. And that's it. I mean, The whole episode last week just gone like that. I was expecting more.
Yeah, there was a lot of emotion in that. You could tell.
Yeah.
From my observation, I think T'Pol really regrets what happened on Vulcan.
Yeah.
She's really got problems, and the fact that she got emotional when Archer gave her the compass, I forgot to mention actually, that you could see she was getting really emotional. She was really struggling with her emotions there. I think the whole situation on Vulcan in last week's episode, it's really weighing heavy on her. And I still don't think she knows how to handle it.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, just a quick question. She said she went to Mount Seleia to meditate. Wasn't it Mount Seleia where they took Spock in the search for Spock, at the end of the search for Spock for the Faltor Pan? That was Mount Seleia, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Right, resuming their search for the Bird of Prey, the Enterprise is again attacked by two Orion interceptors, claiming they stole Orion property. The Enterprise is suffering damage until a Bird of Prey appears and chases off the interceptors. Docking with the Enterprise, they find out that it is the Augments. Malik meets with Archer and tells him that Sung has contacted him and they have come to rescue him. Archer says his order asked R to take the Augments back to Earth. Malik says Earth despises the whole idea of his kind, and besides, they are superior to humans.
Well, that kind of attitude is not going to help their cause, no. Is it? If they're going to go around saying we're superior to humans, then yeah, Earth isn't going to like them.
You know how to get everyone to like you. Tell everyone you're superior to them. That always works.
That always works. Yeah, always.
Oh, every time. I thought in that scene, Malik reminded me a lot of Agent Smith.
There you go. Yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Very, very much so in his work, the way he spoke, in his mannerisms. I thought very much like Agent Smith.
Yes. So Malik warns Archer that he's going to attack him, and then a moment later he grabs Archer's neck. He grabs Archer's neck, threatening him to kill him if Malcolm or anybody else interferes. As the rest of the Yeogmans break into the Enterprise, Malik, with Archer as a hostage, exits and the ready room onto the bridge and then to the turbo lift. They proceed to the brig and release Sung. Persis hugs him and Sung smiles. At the docking port, Malik arrives with Archer in front of the rest of the Yeogmans and Sung. Sung says that he's proud of all of them and tells Archer to go home and start learning to speak Klingon.
Now, have I missed something there?
What do you think?
Why has Sung told Archer to go home and start learning to speak Klingon?
See, I thought that was so powerful because to me, what he was basically saying is without these augments, in my mind, what he was saying, without these augments, the Klingons are going to just absolutely have their way with the humans. So if you're not doing any of this genetic engineering to make yourself stronger, faster, smarter, when you think about the strength of the Klingons, of course, you know, being war prone, then basically you better learn Klingon because that's going to be the new language. They're going to take over. They're going to win. They're going to destroy you.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Also, when Sung went into the... Where are they?
The brig.
They're in the brig. So when Sung is released from the brig, Persis walked up to him and said, "Persis," as if to say, "This is who I am." And yet, he recognized Malik straight away.
Yes, only with his DNA. So maybe he doesn't know how they look. You know, he just knows their DNA. Don't forget that Malik or Persis was 10 years old when he was captured. So now she's probably 20. Well,
dear, she would be 20, 10, yeah.
20.
How would Malik be?
Yeah, same.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. I don't understand how he would recognize Malik but not Persis. How would he know them?
Well, I don't know if he recognized Malik.
He did. He went up and said Malik. It was Sung that said Malik.
Creative shortcut?
Potentially. Again, 90% of the people wouldn't notice.
Malik leaves the Archer and returns to the Bird of Prey with the others. The ship warps out with the Enterprise unable to pursue due to damaged engines.
Can we take a moment here to talk about the Bird of Prey and just how well done it was even back then? When I saw it come into the scene, I was like, oh, the Bird of Prey is always just this iconic, mean-looking ship.
They are beautiful machines.
Yeah, they did such a good job on this one. Yeah, on the outside, exactly.
Yeah. They're a little bit, how do you say that, spacious in the inside?
A little bit dark. Not yes. Very decorative.
Yeah, no. Dark and red.
Yeah.
Not a good combination.
On the Bird of Prey, Sung takes command and tells the Augment that they are going to retrieve thousands of their brothers and sisters who are waiting to be born. Let's go get them, Sung states to his children. Mm. And then, to be continued.
Yeah. Such a good episode overall.
Yeah. There was some little things that I picked up, as I said, that are not really that don't make sense. But yeah, overall, a good episode. Very very nice. Well, if you except for the augments, very nice acting from all the guests on this episode.
Were they acting badly or were they acting really really well?
I will go
with badly.
Yeah, well, it could be they're acting exactly how their characters were supposed to be portrayed.
Yeah.
You know, to me, a successful Star Trek episode, you have to have the moral question that you have to sit there and does it give you that moment of pause? Like, is this augmentation? Because I think sometime in the future, we're going to be faced with this, right? Is augmentation a good thing or a bad thing, and how would you handle it? And this episode did that. You also have the kind of the captain, right? The sly captain outsmarting the enemy, which you have in this episode. And of course, you have the fantastic space moment scenes with the Klingon Bird of Prey coming in. It, to me, it had a little bit of everything in it. Yes, there were moments that were silly, a little bit, you know, canny, and the acting needed some help here and there. But overall, this whole episode, I was just, yeah, this is right up my alley.
Yeah, definitely agree. It was a very good episode in the grand scheme of things. Yes.
Yeah, I agree too. And that concludes the review of Star Trek Enterprise Season 4, Episode 4, Borderland. So now we're going to have a quick chat with Ryan. So, Dave, if you want to go and start the interview part.
So, Ryan, what was your first experience of Star Trek? What got you into it in the first place?
My parents loved watching it, and it was, you know, my parents were not big TV watchers. My dad, you know, owned his own business. He was constantly working. My mom worked night shift as a nurse, so it took a lot for them to sit down and watch a TV show. And this was the original Star Trek series, and of course, Next Generation were two of the TV shows that they would always sit down and watch, and that was really our family time together. So my brother was way more of a geek than me growing up. He was, you know, one of those kids that just would come home in grade school with quantum physics books and just loved building ships out of constructs because Legos weren't as cool to him. He had constructs, if anybody remembers that.
No, and I've not heard of that.
And he would build the ships and things like that out. So, you know, to me, it was a slow process. I was more into, at that time, believe it or not, football and the typical stuff boys are into. But it wore off little by little on me with the, you know, just how much my family was into it. So later on, it just really stuck with me and something that now, of course, as an adult, I'm passing down to my kids.
That's very nice to be able to enjoy Star Trek with your family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the people I know who like Star Trek, they're usually found out, you know, on their own or because of reruns of the original series or things like that. But no, I actually never heard of anyone who told me that they enjoyed Star Trek with their family. So that's really nice.
Yeah. I got into Star Trek with my dad kind of passed it on to me, but not because he was a fan necessarily, because he didn't switch it off when it was on. Now, I'm not old enough to remember the original run, and I'm pretty certain, Ryan, that you're not either. But the reruns of the original series were, I don't know, there was a certain attraction for me that I can't quite put my hand on. Was there anything particular about the original series that attracted you to it at all?
So this is going to sound a little odd, probably not to your audience, but anybody outside of your audience would find this odd. But Kirk, to me, was always extremely inspirational and has affected who I am today in a way. His character there, his leadership style, always wanting to win. And there were no situations where there wasn't a solution if, you know, you had the right crew that you built around you. I've been in management now for over 20 years in corporate America and have built some incredible teams. And funny enough, a lot of the principles that I've applied are stuff you can find in little bits and pieces in Kirk and Star Trek and Picard and different things that happen from these fictional characters. I have a lot of award-winning teams out there. And it was always about surrounding yourself with the best people and also being able to take charge and say, this is the direction we're going to go, even if it wasn't the easy path. And that, to me, is what kind of Kirk and Picard and them always did so well differently, completely different styles of leadership, but both extremely effective and both useful in different scenarios. So to me, Star Trek is something that I can apply. I've applied way later in life. And that's what stuck with me is that leadership style of, you know, him always taking charge, having an answer. And, you know, that scene where he bites the apple when they're fighting Khan and says, I don't like to lose, when they find out that the ship's actually working and not destroyed as everybody thought. That's the type of stuff that just sticks with me.
So there you go, people who think that Star Trek is just another sci-fi series. See, you can get something and use it in your life.
You can get a career out of watching Star Trek. There you go.
Yeah.
I think that might depend to some extent on the age you are when you first watch it. If you're of younger years, I would imagine you're more likely to watch the early series of Star Trek and think to yourself, actually, yeah, there's a lot of really useful and valuable information in this, but you come to this day and age and look back on it 50 odd years ago and think, actually, the acting was pretty poor. The sets were made of cardboard. It wasn't actually that good after all, but I don't know. Presuming you picked up this appreciation of Kirk and how it applies to what you're doing in your management role at quite an early age.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I had, my dad owned a family business, so I was put into, you know, very early age at 12 and 13 years old, I was running my dad's shop because he was writing software and he didn't want to deal with the building computer part. That wasn't what was interesting to him. He wanted to write software. That's where most of the money was coming from. But he also had the storefront that he opened. And this was the first time he'd moved the business out of the house. So he didn't have enough money at that moment to hire a full-time employee. So he's like, you're going to run the storefront. You build the computers when the customers come in, you sell them, you do all this. This is a weird position for a 12, 13-year-old to be in. But in a lot of ways, I feel like certain elements of Star Trek and that those leadership things, of course, it was my father as well as a huge example, and my mom and things and taking charge. But there were little things that you picked up about having that confidence about them. You know, Kirk always had that confidence, even when everything was stacked against him, he would come out with the confidence so his crew didn't realize how bad of a situation they were in. So I don't know that I analyzed it at that moment like I do today, but I do think parts of that show had an impact on how I presented myself. I was a 12 or 13 year old kid. I had the technical experience to do what needed to be done to build machines, but I didn't have the true, you know, wisdom, and basically had to fake it in a way and to make it. And later in life, of course, it, you know, looking back on it, I've applied it slightly differently, but I do think it had an impact on me even back then. Also, you can't forgo the fact that Kirk had such a confidence with girls, and girls were a big deal when you're a teenager. So, you know, that definitely had an impact.
Do you think that your dad was inspired by James T. Kirk as well?
That's such a good question, and I've never asked him. I'm going to have to go back and see if he got that same inspiration out of it. I don't know the answer to that. I definitely see some of Kirk in him. You know, he took huge risks with the family, starting his own business. I remember him waking up as a kid and remember him being in, because he didn't have an office at this point. He was building this business from the ground up, and him and his business partner, I walked by the one bedroom that was near ours as a kid, and there were Tums all over the ground and computer parts everywhere. And they were just working all through the night trying to build this dream, you know, that they had that eventually one day, you know, took off. And so, but it took many, many years and a lot of struggle to get there. But I'm sure some of that kind of bold attitude came from some of these shows.
You know what? You're going to ask your dad and then you're going to come back on the show and tell us.
I would love to do that.
Sounds like a plan. Have you got anything else, Yannick?
Do you watch the new series like Discovery, for example, the same way that you did the original series reruns or the Next Gen? Or is it, I mean, when I watched Discovery for the first time, I had to kind of force myself during the first episode because it was Star Trek, but it was not really Star Trek. So, but it grew on me, I guess. So I was wondering if you, what's your relation to the newest stuff on Star Trek?
I mean, it's funny because I guess in a way I'm one of these hybrid geeks when it comes to Star Trek because I love Discovery. And I, from the aspect that to me, it brings a whole new generation. Yes, it's not the same level of space opera that Next Gen was. I don't feel like they have put as many moral dilemmas and things in the show yet that we've seen, although there have been moments that were just awesome. But overall, I think the action and the CGI and the acting and, of course, you know, very strong female cast in there and things have all attribute to this next generation of kids and will speak to them. I don't like, of course, the fact that it's kind of behind a paywall, and so a lot of people don't get to see it like we have. But then, of course, when they brought in Christopher Pike, I mean, this is just awesome. Every scene he's in, just absolutely incredible. And Michael, I think, does an amazing job through this. So yeah, I love it. I absolutely dig it. I love, of course, the ship itself. Does it follow the, you know, the same, you know, storylines and things, and really a good continuation? No, it's kind of its own canon on its own, but I still love it. It's Star Trek. It's back on TV. This alone makes me excited. And there's enough of Star Trek in there that keeps me going.
I'm with you on that one. I mean, yeah, I totally agree with you that you can't go into something like this and expect it to be based on what you've known in the past. I mean, look at all the remakes that have been made of TV series and films. You just can't compare them to what was in the earlier series. But I think, yeah, Discovery, it is Star Trek. It is different. It is challenging in some of the decisions, production decisions that have been made. But I find it one of my favorite series.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it.
In episode zero, we were talking about Discovery, and I agree with you, Brian. I think maybe if it's a bit different from the Star Trek back in the days, it has the opportunity, the capability to bring new viewers that would not necessarily, you know, come to Star Trek because of the, as you said, as the dilemma and the space opera thing, and they are more action-oriented viewers. So, yeah, as I said, it grew on me, and now I like it. I like it a lot.
I mean, kids are so distracted these days. I took my kids, 6 and 5, to Disney World, and they were just completely bored. They wow. were. There were a few areas where they were excited, but for the most part, you know, the little characters coming out, they knew were dressed up people, and that didn't impress them. And, you know, it's a small world. And it really, if you look at it, Disney hasn't really updated itself in a long time. And the kids these days are so used to seeing so much magic, right? This mobile phones and tablets and the movies and the quality of the action. And it's almost like a built-in ADD because there's so much to grab their attention. So I think you have to have that intense action and throw some of that drama in. I'm going to have to test it out and see what the attention span of my kids would be watching, say, Next Generation, which they've sat there sometimes, but, you know, they don't really watch it. And then maybe put on Discovery, because I've not played that for them yet, and see if that captures their attention more. I'm guessing it would, because there's just a lot more going on, and the aliens are a lot more realistic. You know, when you look at some of the aliens that they have in the cast, and of course the Klingons, as we talked about, are so intense, it probably would keep their attention a little more.
We have 15 minutes left of recording before Ryan has to leave. So, Dave, I guess maybe it's time to go to our 7 questions for our guests.
It certainly is. Well, it's 7 questions at the moment. It may change. So, Ryan, we're starting to build up a list of questions. Mm-hmm. These are quick-fire questions. Quick answers, please.
All right.
Are you ready?
Go.
Favorite series?
Next Generation.
Okay. Favorite film?
Undiscovered Country.
Oh, choice. Yeah, definitely. Favorite ship?
NCC 1701-D.
Okay, nice. The next gen one. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, favorite captain?
Kirk.
Yeah, that it's makes sense.
I thought you were going to say Janeway.
You, out. Favorite character?
Spock.
Original series or Discovery?
Original series.
Okay. Favorite storyline? And this could be an arc plot, a single episode, or a segment from a film.
Picard being tortured with the Borg, and I cannot think of the episode. There are 4 lights. Is that the one? I'm getting it wrong. That series arc where Picard is captured, tortured by the Borg, that whole series was just so intense.
And finally, favorite villain?
I mean, you got to give it to Khan. There's just nothing like Khan to me in the movie series.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Good answers, definitely.
Well, there's no good or bad answers on this.
Well, there are. Anything that involves Voyager.
Yeah. I was really afraid that there would be a question that was like plain Star Trek knowledge that would be like, I don't know.
No. I think for these ones, these are all going to be entirely subjective.
No, those are great questions. I loved it.
Well, that brings up to the end of this episode. Thanks to everybody who downloaded our previous episodes. That's really nice, and we really appreciate that. Our podcast can be found everywhere fine podcasts are, including but not exclusively on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcasts. Please help us spread the word by sharing the show on social media, talking to a friend, download it on your grandma's phone. And if you're so inclined, leave us a nice review in your podcast app. And Dave, where can people contact us?
Of course, you can find our website over at tlgreyhot.org. And don't forget, of course, that you can also leave a comment against the show notes for this episode or any other episode if you want to give your feedback that way.
Yes, you can also send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org to tell us how good we were or how bad we were.
We are quite social, so you can find us on some social networks. You can find us at Twitter, twitter.com/TEGH podcast, facebook.com/TEGH podcast, and also on Telegram. We have a group on Telegram, t.me/TEGH podcast. We're also on Mastodon as well, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
I don't know the address for that one. Is it TEGH podcast@mastodon.social?
It is.
Oh, what a guess.
Yes. Unless otherwise stated, this episode is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution Sharealike license, which means you can pretty much do whatever you want with it, as long as you credit us as the original authors for everything that we did. If you want to use part of the reviews, that's published mainly by Memory Alpha under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license. And also, if you publish something based on what we said, you have to release it under the same license.
And of course, this podcast is a part of the Other Side Podcast Network. You can find more shows, and our network is actually growing as we speak. Find more details over at otherside.network.
Yes. And Ryan, where can people find more about you?
Well, listen, I didn't come on here to plug anything because I just love this podcast. And thank you for inviting me to be a part of this. It was so awesome. I love talking Star Trek, and I love being around fellow Trekkies to discuss the series.
He's definitely coming back, Yannick.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you, Ryan, for joining us. As I was saying 2 weeks ago, we are still, searching where we are, what we are doing. We don't really know what we're doing, but we're trying to do the best we can. And the first guests are always the ones who try new things, and we try new things on them. So thanks again, Ryan. And because you don't want to say it, I'm going to say it. DestinationLinux.com. Is that that's the
DestinationLinux.org? If you want to check out the podcast, if you like Linux and geeky stuff, and but this podcast is awesome. I love what you guys are doing. Keep doing it. I love the way you're reviewing the show. So I feel like you've got a great direction here. And I can't wait till you guys get to Discovery stuff. I want to get there.
As soon as Discovery Season 3 is out, we're going to review them. Yeah.
Awesome.
Excellent. I would also like to just introduce an apology into this episode for the length of last week's episode. I've had feedback from friends to say that it was a heck of a long episode, but I can absolutely and definitively guarantee that this episode is not as long as last week's.
Yes. Next episode will be a review of Enterprise Season 5, Cold Station 12, plus our usual fortnightly news roundup. Dave, do you have something more to say?
Nope, that's it from me.
Ryan?
I'm good.
Okay. Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode. We will catch you next week. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Bye.
Thank you. You were listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows on otherside.network.